ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम थर्ड कैंटो चैप्टर 19 द किलिंग ऑफ द डीमन हिरण्याक्ष टेक्स्ट 32 मया यथानुक्तम अवादी ते हरे कृतावतारस्य सुमित्र चेष्टितं यथा हिरण्याक्ष उदारविक्रमो महामृधे क्रीरनवन निराकृतः। मया यथानुक्तम् अवादिते हरे कृतावतारस्य सुमित्रचेष्टितम् यथा हिरण्याक्ष उदारविक्रमो महामृधे क्रीरनवन् निराकृतः। मया यथानुक्तम् अवादिते हरे कृतावतारस्य सुमित्रचेष्टितम् यथा हिरण्याक्ष उदारविक्रमो महामृधे क्रीडनवन् निराकृतः। मया यथानुक्तम् अवादिते हरे कृतावतारस्य सुमित्रचेष्टितम् यथा हिरण्याक्ष उदारविक्रमो महामृधे क्रीडनवन् निराकृतः। यथा मया by me, yatha, as, anuktam, told, avadi, was explained, te, to you, hare, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, krita avatarasya, who assumed the incarnation, Sumitra, O dear Vidura, Cheshtitam, the activities, Jatha, as, Hiranaksha, Udara, very extensive, Vikramaha, prowess, Mahamridhe, in a great fight, Kriranavat, like a plaything, Nirakritaha, was killed. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, I have explained to you the personality of Godhead coming down as the first boar incarnation and killing in a great fight a demon of unprecedented prowess, as if he were just a plaything. This has been narrated by me as I heard it from my predecessor, spiritual master. Please repeat after me. Maitreya continued.
My dear Vidura,
I have explained to you the personality of Godhead's coming down as the first boar incarnation and killing in a great fight a demon of unprecedented prowess. As if he were just a plaything. This has been narrated by me as I heard it from my predecessor, spiritual master. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here the sage Maitreya admits that he explained the incident of the killing of Hiranyaksha by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a straight narration. He did not manufacture anything or add interpretation, but explained whatever he had heard from his spiritual master. Thus he accepted as bona fide the system of parampara, or receiving the transcendental message in disciplic succession. Unless received by this bona fide process of hearing from a spiritual master, the statement of an acharya or preceptor cannot be valid. It is also stated here that although the demon Hiranyaksha was unlimited in prowess, he was just like a doll for the Lord. A child breaks so many dolls without real endeavor. Similarly, although a demon may be very powerful and extraordinary in the eyes of an ordinary man in the material world, to the Lord, killing such a demon is no difficulty. He can kill millions of demons as simply as a child plays with dolls and breaks them. Maya jatha nuktam avadite hare kritavatarasya sumitra cheshtitam jatha hiranyaksha udara vikramo mahamridhe kriranavan nirakritaha. Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, I have explained to you the personality of Godhead's coming down as the first boar incarnation and killing in a great fight a demon of unprecedented prowess, as if he were just a plaything. This has been narrated by me as I heard it from my predecessor, spiritual master. So, this last few chapters are actually describing Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyakshas coming down to this material nature from... Who were Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu? Vijay and Jai. So Jai is the... Jai became Hiranyakashipu and Vijay became Hiranyaksha. They were cursed by the four Kumaras that they would be... they would fall down to the material nature and... It was actually the Lord's arrangement. He wanted to fulfill the desire of Hiranyakashipu and Vijay to fight with him. Now in the spiritual sky they couldn't fight with the Lord, therefore the arena for fight had to be arranged on this material nature. And as a result of that they had to come down to the material nature. So what was the arrangement? The arrangement was that these two boys, these four Kumaras cursed these two gatekeepers. And so they came to the material nature. In three yugas they came and became enemies of the Lord, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha in Satya Yuga, Ravan, Kumbhakarna in Treta Yuga, and Shishupal and Dantavakra in Dantavakra. They are very, very powerful personalities. Now, Hiranyaksha was powerful. He was so powerful that he defeated everyone in the universe, except Lord Brahma. He defeated everybody. Brahma is his grandfather, therefore he didn't challenge him. He was the son, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, were the son of Kashyapa. Kashyapa was the son of Pulaha. And Pulaha was the son of Lord Brahma. Brahma had 10 Manasaputras, the children who are born from his mind. So these personalities were extremely, we can see that they were very, very powerful personality. And there are two types of people. One, those who are powerful, but those who benefit the people in general. But there are some powerful people who actually misuse their power and cause harm to the living entity. So, this Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha became very demoniac. They started to cause a lot of distress to the people. They were very cruel. They were very offensive to the saintly people, and especially the demigods. They were very envious. So, they were actually the cousins of the demigods. Not the cousins, stepbrothers. Kashyapa had many wives. One of his wives was Aditi, and from Aditi came the demigods, Adityas. And from Diti came these two Daityas, Diti's sons, two sons, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Yeah, I made a mistake. Not Pulaha was the father of Kashyapa, Pulastha was the father. Brahma had 10 sons, Pulastha, Pulaha, Kratu, Angira, Atri, and youngest was Narada. So these were Brahma's Manasaputras. And so these demigods were given charge of the universal affair. All the affairs of the universe is controlled by the demigods. There are different departments and there are different in charge of those departments. And who are those personalities? They are the suras or the demigods. Why they are suras? Because they are obedient to the Supreme Personality of God. When somebody becomes a devotee of the Lord, naturally Lord gives them some responsible position. Because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller. Since he is the Supreme Controller, he actually gives the responsibility or important position to his favorite individuals, his favorite devotees. Therefore, devotees are always given the responsible position. Like if you, in your house, who will you give the responsibility? Or if you have a business, who will you appoint in important position? Those who are obedient to you. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Controller, and those who are obedient to him, he gives them responsible position. But the demons, they consider why they have got the facility. Why not us? And that was the consideration of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. That why we are coming from the same father. Why this our stepbrothers have the residence in the heavenly planets where there are so many facilities and they are given the charge of important position. Why not us? So attack them. That is the demoniac mentality. They don't consider that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Proprietor, he has the authority to appoint different position, different people in different positions. And this way Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, these two brothers, started to create a lot of disturbance, and Hiranyaksha went and defeated many, many very powerful individuals. One of the last persons that he approached was Varuna and asked him, come and fight with me. Varuna said that, look, I am old. I am no match for you. You are very powerful, so you don't really get the joy that you want to derive up by defeating me. So go and fight with somebody who is equal to you in power. Then only you'll derive, or more powerful than you, by defeating him, then you'll derive the joy. So, then Hiranyaksha asked, who is that who is more powerful than me? Who is that who is the right match for me? He said, there is somebody. His name is Hari. So he asked, where is Hari? He said, Hari is everywhere, but it is difficult to find him. Although he is everywhere, it is difficult to find him. So, but those who are fortunate, they can get to see him. So you search for him, and if he wants, he may appear in front of you. So then Hiranyaksha very proudly stepped out looking for Hari. And then he saw that a boar was rising from below, huge, gigantic boar with the earth placed on his tusks. The boars have their tusks coming from the lower jaw. Elephants have their tusks from the upper jaw. But the boars have their tusks come from the lower jaw. And the earth was placed on his upper jaw. Vashuti dashana shikhare. Dashana means teeth. The earth planet was situated on the teeth of, or the tusks of boar, and boar rose. The earth actually fell on the nether region, lower region. And he raised the earth from the lower region. And Hiranyaksha became very agitated, very angry, that who dares to lift the earth without my permission? It is because of him that the earth actually fell into the lower region. So he was questioning, so he challenged. So Varahadev, this boar was Lord Varahadev. So he appeared in front of Hiranyaksha. And he placed the earth again to the orbit, and then he accepted the challenge of Hiranyaksha. And they fought. They fought for a long time. And they were, actually it was Lord's pastime. The Lord could kill him in no time, as this verse has been described that kriranak kriranan kriranan niva kriranak kriranava nirakrita kriranavat krirana kriranak krirana or kriranak means a plaything. Krira means play and kriranā means a plaything, a toy. A child plays with a toy. And the child can break the toy without any difficulty. So, when he killed Hiranyaksha, apparently the Lord was fighting. Hiranyaksha was very powerful. But although Hiranyaksha was very powerful, but the Lord was more powerful than anyone else. Compared to the Lord, everyone is absolutely insignificant. No matter how powerful one may appear to be, apparently. So they fought. There is a long description of the fight. Should I read the description of the fight between Hiranyakashipu, between Hiranyaksha and the Lord? It starts before, I'll just start from this chapter only, the 18th chapter. Maitreya continued, the proud and falsely glorious Daitya paid little heed to the words of Varuna. O dear Vidura, he learned from Narada the whereabouts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and hurriedly betook himself to the depth of the ocean. He saw there the all-powerful Personality of Godhead in his boar incarnation, bearing the earth upward on the ends of his tusks and rubbing him of his splendor with his reddish eyes. The demon laughed, "Oh, an amphibious beast." He thought that boar was an amphibious beast. The demon addressed the Lord, "O best of the demigods, dressed in the form of a boar, just hear me. This earth is entrusted to us, the inhabitants of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence and not be hurt by me. You rascal, you have been nourished by our enemies to kill us. And you have killed some demons by remaining invisible. O fool, your power is only mystic. So today I shall enliven my kinsmen by killing you." The demon continued, "When you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mess hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice and devotional service will also automatically cease to exist, like trees without roots." Although the Lord was, actually it's a nice point here, that Hiranyaksha knew the situation of a devotee. Devotee derives everything from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For a devotee, the source of his existence is the Supreme Personality of God. So he knows that. That the demigods and sages, they survive because of the Supreme Personality of God. So when I kill you, then they will also perish. But little did he know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never be killed. But here is the one important thing for us to understand from Hiranyaksha. A gold must be collected even from a dirty place. A good point made by a demon also must be taken into consideration. So Hiranyaksha is saying that for a devotee, he is saying the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice and devotional service will also automatically cease to exist when the Lord is killed. He said, when I kill you, they'll also cease to exist. So that means what? That the devotees exist because of the Lord, for the sake of the Lord. So, what lesson do we learn here? That our entire life should be completely dedicated to the service of the Lord. And nothing else. No other consideration. If we do that, then our life will become successful. And whoever does that, his life becomes successful. Who doesn't do that, his life goes to waste. So let us become good devotees. The demon who had golden hair on his head and fearful tusks gave chase to the Lord while he was rising from the water, even as an alligator would chase an elephant. Roaring like thunder, he said, "Are you not ashamed of running away before a challenging adversary? There is nothing reproachable for shameless creatures." The Lord placed the earth within his sight on the surface of the water and transferred to her his own energy in the form of the ability to float on the water. While the enemy stood looking on, Brahma, the creator of the universe, extolled the Lord, and the other demigods rained flowers on him. The demon, who had a wealth of ornaments, bangles, and beautiful golden armor on his body, chased the Lord from behind with a great mess. The Lord tolerated his piercing ill words, but in order to reply to him, he expressed his terrible anger. The personality of Godhead said, "Indeed, we are creatures of the jungles, and we are searching after hunting dogs like you. One who is freed from the entanglement of death has no fear from the loose talk in which you are indulging, for you are bound up by the laws of death." In the material nature, no matter how powerful one is, he is bound by the laws of death. "Certainly we have stolen the charge of inhabitants of Rasatala and have lost all shame. Although bitten by your powerful mess, I shall stay here in the water for some time, because having created enmity with a powerful enemy, I have now no place to go." "You are supposed to be the commander of many foot soldiers, and now you may take prompt steps to overthrow us. Give up all your foolish talk and wipe out the cares of your kith and kin by slaying us. One may be proud, yet he does not deserve a seat in an assembly if he fails to fulfill his promised words." Okay, then I'll go. So this is how it started. He challenged the Lord. Hissing indignantly, all his senses shaken by wrath, the demon quickly sprang upon the Lord and dealt him a blow with his powerful mess. So Hiranyaksha, with his powerful mess, just hit the Lord. Tried to hit the Lord. The Lord, however, by moving slightly aside, dodged the violent mess blow aimed at his breast by the enemy, just as an accomplished yogi would elude death. The personality of Godhead, now exhibiting his anger and rush to meet the demon, who bit his lip in rage, took up his mace again and began to repeatedly brandish it about. Then with his mace, the Lord struck the enemy on the right of his brow. But since the demon was expert in fighting, O gentle Vidura, he protected himself by a maneuver of his own mess. In this way, the demon Hiranyaksha and the Lord, the personality of Godhead, struck each other with the huge messes, each enraged and seeking his own victory. There was keen rivalry between the two combatants. Both had sustained injuries on their bodies from the blows of each other's pointed messes, and each grew more and more enraged at the smell of blood on his person. In their eagerness to win, they performed maneuvers of various kinds, and their contest looked like an encounter between two forceful bulls for the sake of a cow. Okay, I'll just go. So then Brahma appeared, and then Brahma said, "My dear Lord, this demon has proved to be a constant pinprick to the demigods, the brahmanas, the cows, and innocent persons who are spotless and always dependent upon worshipping your lotus feet. He has become a source of fear by unnecessarily harassing them. Since he has attained a boon from me, he has become a demon, always searching for a proper combatant, wandering all over the universe for this infamous purpose." So in this way, Brahma prayed to the Lord, and then, after hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which were freed from all sinful purposes and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. The Lord, who had appeared from the nostrils of Brahma, sprung and aimed his mace at the chin of his enemy, the Hiranyaksha demon, who was stalking fearlessly before him. Struck by the demon's mace, however, the Lord's mace slipped from his hand and looked splendid as it fell down whirling. This was miraculous, for the mace was blazing wonderfully. Even though the demon had an excellent opportunity to strike his unarmed foe without obstruction, he respected the law of single combat, thereby kindling the fury of the Supreme Lord. As the Lord's mace fell to the ground and a cry of alarm rose from the witnessing crowd of gods and rishis, the personality of Godhead acknowledged the demon's love of righteousness and therefore invoked his Sudarshan discus. As the discus began to revolve in the Lord's hand, and the Lord contended at close quarters with the chief of his Vaikuntha attendants, who had been born as Hiranyaksha, a wild son of Diti, that issued from every direction strange expressions uttered by those who were witnessing from airplanes. They had no knowledge of the Lord's reality, and they cried, "May victory attend you. Pray dispatch him, play no more with him." When the demon saw the personality of Godhead, who had eyes just like lotus petals, standing in position before him, armed with his Sudarshan discus, his senses were overpowered by indignation. He began to hiss like a serpent, and he bit his lip in great resentment. The demon, who had fearful tusks, stared at the personality of Godhead as though to burn him. Springing into the air, he aimed his mace at the Lord, exclaiming at the same time, "You are slain." O saintly Vidura, while his enemy looked on, the Lord in his boar form, the enjoyer of all sacrificial offerings, playfully knock down the mess with his left foot, even as it came upon him with the force of a tempest. The Lord then said, take up your weapon and try again, eager as you are to conquer me. Challenged in these words, the demon aimed his mess at the Lord and once more loudly roared. When the Lord saw the mess flying towards him, he stood firmly where he was and caught it with the same ease as Garuda, the king of birds, would seize a serpent. His valor thus frustrated, the great demon felt humiliated and was put out of countenance. He was reluctant to take back the mess when it was offered by the personality of Godhead. He now took a trident, which was as rapacious as flaming fire, and hurled it against the Lord, as the enjoyer of all sacrifices, even as one would use penance for a malevolent purpose against a holy Brahmana. Hurled by the mighty demon with all his strength, the flying trident shone brightly in the sky. The personality of Godhead, however, tore it to pieces with his disgust, Sudarshan, which had a sharp-edged rim, even as Indra cut off a wing of Garuda. The demon was enraged. The demon was enraged when his trident was cut to pieces by the disgust of the personality of Godhead. He therefore advanced towards the Lord and, roaring aloud, struck his heart fist against the Lord's broad chest, which bore the mark of Srivatsa. Then he went out of sight. Hit in the manner by the demon of the Lord, who had appeared as the first boar, did not feel the least quaking in any part of his body, any more than an elephant would when struck with a wreath of flower. The demon, however, employed many conjuring tricks against the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of Yogamaya. At the sight of this, the people were filled with alarm and thought that the dissolution of the universe was near. Fierce winds began to blow from all directions, spreading darkness occasioned by dust and hailstorms. Stones came in volleys from every corner, as if thrown by machine guns. The luminaries in outer space disappeared due to the skies being overcast with masses of cloud, which were accompanied by lightning and thunder. The sky rained pus, hair, blood, stool, urine and bones. So then I'll just go further. When the demon saw his magic forces dispelled, he once again came into the presence of the personality of Godhead, Keshava, and fell and full of rage, tried to embrace him within his arms to crush him. But to his great amazement, he found the Lord standing outside the circle of his arms. So at last, he just tried to get hold of the Lord and crush him. But as he went to do that, he found the Lord is standing out of his arms. The demon now began to strike the Lord with his hard fist, but the Lord Adhoksha just slapped him in the root of the ear, even as Indra, the Lord of the Maruts, hit the demon Britra. Though struck indifferently by the Lord, the conqueror of all, the demon's body began to wheel. His eyeballs bulged out of their sockets, his arms and legs broken, and the hair on his heels scattered. He fell down dead like a gigantic tree uprooted by the wind. So finally, when the Lord killed him, how did he do that? Just struck him on the ear with his left hand. Slapped him in the root. The Lord Adhukshaja slapped him in the root of the ear. Hit the deer. And as a result of that, though struck indifferently by the Lord, the conqueror of all, this demon was the conqueror of all in the universe. So although he was the conqueror of all in the universe, what happened? A little slap from the Lord and he just started to wail, and finally he fell on the ground like an uprooted tree. He was struck by a forefoot of the Lord, whom yogis seeking freedom from their unreal material bodies meditate upon in seclusion in mystic trance. While gazing on his countenance, this crest jewel of Diti's son has cast off his mortal coil. Before that, Brahma, just when he came there, Brahma admiringly said, "Oh, who could meet such blessed death?" Being struck by the lotus feet of the Lord, lotus forefoot of the Lord, which is meditated upon by the yogis. So in this chapter it has been pointed out, after thus killing the most formidable demon, Hiranyaksha, the Supreme Lord Hari, the origin of the boar species, returned to his own abode, where there is always an uninterrupted festival. The Lord was praised by all the demigods headed by Brahma. And then today's verse, Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, I have explained to you the personality of Godhead's coming down as the first boar incarnation and killing in a great fight a demon of unprecedented prowess as if he were just a plaything. This has been narrated by me as I heard it from my predecessor, spiritual master." So, Maitreya Rishi narrated this incident to Vidura. So here he is pointing out that this is not that something he just concocted. He heard it from his predecessor, spiritual master, his spiritual master. So in this way, the spiritual knowledge is received from the spiritual master. And this is what constitutes the parampara or disciplic succession. The spiritual master imparts the knowledge. What is this knowledge? The knowledge about the Lord and his activities. And by hearing these narrations, our faith in the Lord increases. Our faith in the Lord. So that's why this is actually a big challenge. In the material nature, there are so many stories going on, especially nowadays. All kinds of strange characters are being created, Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, and all kinds of characters are created. And it seems that they are endowed with supernatural power. But it's not. These are not such stories like Spider-Man or Superman. These are not the stories of Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter. What is the difference? These stories are told by self-realized souls. These incidents are told by self-realized souls. Like, how did, say, let us consider for our case. Where did we get this information? Where are we getting this? From Prabhupada's books. Now, will Prabhupada, what did Prabhupada do? Did Prabhupada concoct some stories? No. He presented the scriptures as it has been given by the previous acharyas. And then we can see Prabhupada's character. Prabhupada is a personality who never tolerated any nonsense. He never spent a single moment in frivolous talk. So why is such a serious person, who is so wise, so learned, why should he present something if it is not the absolute? So that is how we must have our faith established. And it's not only Prabhupada. Who narrated it before Srila Prabhupada? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Look at his character. Before that, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Before that, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. Baladev Vidyabhushan. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Krishnadas Kaviraj, Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, goes on and on and on. Madhvacharya, Vasudev, who is the original narrator of this incident? Vasudev. And from Vasudev, we go to Narad. From Narad, we go to Brahma. And from Brahma, who originally narrated this incident? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So this knowledge is coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why we can accept this knowledge without any hesitation. Not only the narrations of Lord's pastimes, the philosophy, the science behind this topic. So that is how we have to develop our conviction. And the more faith we have, the more this knowledge will affect us. Today we are reading it just as a story, but as our faith grows, our attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, our love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead will increase. So that is the process. What is the ultimate purpose of all these narrations? The purpose of all these narrations, all these presentations in the scriptures, is simply to increase our faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depend upon Him. We become so perturbed with a little difficulty. We become so disturbed with little scarcity. We become so agitated with little discomfort. But if we consider that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is there and who is going to take care of us in all respects, that's the only faith, only confidence that we have to develop. That He is there and He is going to take care of us in all respects. There is nothing to worry about. So that is how we have to develop our Krishna. We have to develop in Krishna consciousness. Development in Krishna consciousness means development of faith in the Supreme Personality of God. We don't have to worry about anything. Krishna will take care. Krishna has given us so much and Krishna will continue to give us everything that we need. That is what we have to understand. And if some difficulties come, we have to understand that those difficulties are simply there to increase our faith in Krishna. Krishna will put us through difficulty. But Krishna will take us out of the difficulty also, if our faith is strong enough. And by doing that, then Krishna will increase our faith. Where is the question of saving if there is no danger? Right? How can you be saved if we are not in a dangerous situation? It's something like Krishna puts us in difficulty. Like, say, we don't know how to swim, and Krishna puts us into the water, and we are about to drown. Then Krishna comes and rescues us. Then from that incident, what do we learn? Then we can say Krishna saved us. If we didn't fall in the water, if we are not in a dangerous situation, where could there be a question of saving? So this is how Krishna puts us through difficulties. And by putting us in difficulties and then taking us out of the difficulty, Krishna increases our faith. But what do we need to have on our part? We have to have faith in Krishna. Krishna, you will save me. And ultimately, when Krishna will save? Krishna will save us from the most dangerous situation. What is the most dangerous situation? Death. So we have to have faith that at that time, Krishna is going to save us. He will save us from the cycle of birth. So that is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. But what happens to us? Little difficulty and we forget Krishna. Little difficulty and we start to scream. Oh, why it is happening to me? Now what shall I do? Now my life has become miserable. Yes, your life has become miserable, so depend upon Krishna. Your life is miserable to begin with. So just depend upon Krishna. Just depend upon Krishna and everything will be alright. And we may not see Krishna, but we can see Krishna's devotees. Krishna works through his devotees. Krishna makes arrangements through his devotees. So remain in the association of devotees and you will see how they are going to save you. Krishna acts in the most amazing way. Krishna acts in the most amazing way. And our business is to depend upon Krishna and he will take care in all respects. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premananda. Yes, Krishna Chan.
We have a couple of questions. First is, you explained how a devotee is always given the responsible position by the Lord. The materialistic devotees, the demigods, are given responsible positions. However, when we see the associates of the Lord, many of them appear to be very simple, not in a response, like the gopis. They are just cowherd girls, and what responsible position they have. So the question is like, why doesn't the Lord appoint us pure devotees? Because in the material world, because if they were to be here, the whole universe would have been easily delivered.
Krishna is very expert in selecting the candidates. He gets the right candidate for the right job. Alright? So some people are expert in management, some individuals. But ultimately, you know, a devotee accepts everything as Krishna's mercy. Krishna did not appoint Uddhav to fight the battle of Kurukshetra. Krishna selected Arjuna. Because he is the right person for it. But when it comes to counseling, and so he selected Uddhava. So in Krishna's arrangement, everyone is perfectly situated in his respective position. So that's what we have to understand. Wherever I am, that is the perfect situation for me to serve Krishna. That is the devotee's consideration. Wherever I am, that is the perfect situation. Not that I have to become something. Not that Uddhava has to become Arjuna to become a devotee. Uddhava is Uddhava as the best devotee. Arjuna is Arjuna as the best devotee. Gopis are Gopis as the best devotees. The cowherd boys are the best. Cowherd boys as the best devotees. So that is their respective position. And they are not competing. Oh, why am I a cowherd boy? Why am I not a gopi? That is a mundane consideration. Envy. Why he is better than me? But the devotee situation is that I am in the perfect situation. Wherever I am, that's the perfect situation. If I am cooking for Krishna, that's the perfect situation. If I am washing the pots for Krishna, that's the perfect situation. If I am distributing books for Krishna, that's the perfect situation. If I am preaching in the universities, that's the perfect situation. So wherever I am situated, that is Krishna's arrangement. But then if Krishna says that please go and wash the pots, then we shouldn't think, oh, I am a big preacher, why should I wash pots? No. Krishna's point is that whatever he wants, whatever is needed for the service, go ahead and do it. And Krishna will empower. Yes, Chandrasekhar?
Two questions.
Yeah.
First one is small, just a detail. In the reading, we heard how Lord Bor returned to his abode. So, just as in Vaikuntha, the Lord is there and all his associates look like Narayan, the question came up in my mind, what did the associates, the eternal associates of Lord Bor look like in his abode? Did they look like Bors also?
Yes, if I'm not mistaken, Prabhupada once mentioned that the Lord in the spiritual sky can have the four-armed form and his pastime form. Like, for example, there is a planet of Lord Nrisingadev where he is half man, half lion. But in the same planet, he is also four-armed. Like, maybe you have noticed the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the old one. There are different planets of different personalities of Godhead. And all of them there are four-armed, Narayan form. So there he is a Narayan form also, and he also has his Leela form. Yeah?
Regarding Krishna protecting us from death, and I think a few days ago I witnessed Mahavishnu Maharaj's passing away. First death I ever saw in my life. And in one way it was most profound, most enriching spiritually. But in another sense, it raised a doubt in my heart, in my material vision. Because I didn't see anything extraordinary, I didn't see any soul, I didn't see a transfer to a spiritual world. In other words, it remained a material event to my eyes. And so I was going to comment.
So now just reflect on it, you know, whose deficiency it is. If you are not able to see his spirit soul going back to Godhead, then whose fault it is? Whose lacking it is? Whose deficiency it is? Did you see any spirit soul? Now, how did you expect to see that spirit soul? But the question is, how did he leave his body? Surrounded by devotees, chanting the holy name, he's absolutely peaceful. chanting himself.
Still it seemed there was there was an intense physical ordeal for him, it seemed.
Krishna is all merciful. Prabhupada said that even if you are not 100%, to go back to Godhead, you have to become 100% pure. Then somebody asked, but Prabhupada, what happens if one is not 100% pure? He's 90%. Prabhupada said, Krishna will cover the 10%. So, what if 20%, 30%? The thing is, you see, on our part we try. But Krishna gives the help. Whatever we are lacking. Like I say, for example, a child is learning to walk. Doesn't the mother give the helping hand? Right? Or the mother just completely indifferent about that and says, okay, you learn to walk. Is that the mother's attitude? No. So similarly, in our devotional service also, in our spiritual life, Krishna is always there to give us a helping hand. And we have to have that faith. Yes, like if death comes now, let's consider it this way. If death comes now, how are we going to face it? Most of us will be completely baffled. Right? But because of this training, because of this endeavor for the last so many years in practicing Krishna consciousness, we have developed some faith. And immediately we may not remember Krishna. But as the difficulty begins to overpower us, at some point we are going to give up our own endeavor and depend upon Krishna. And, you know, it's not going to be easy for the soul to leave the body, which has been in this body for so many years, got used to the habit of this body for so many years. But the thing is, like, Krishna is there. If we depend upon Krishna, Krishna will help us. A simple example. We are devotees. If we get a little hurt, what happens? Don't you scream? Now should you think, oh, he's a devotee, why is he screaming? Should that be our attitude? But the devotee on his part, when he is hurt, he may scream, but the next moment he'll think, oh Krishna. Oh, this is Krishna's mercy. Krishna is reminding me that I am not this body. So this is how his consciousness will work. And that is the purpose, that is the reason why training is so important, practicing the process is so important. Okay, Hare Krishna. Yes, any question?
I have one question. As God selected the devotees who are obedient, but say in today's management sometimes it's difficult or often not possible to find a person who makes us obedient to use their little differences and disagreements, but so how to select a person properly? But they are qualified. So qualification and obedience, what should
be? Leave it up to the selection committee. And a simple answer to that will be, okay, one is not 100% committed, 100% obedient. But if it's a choice between 45%, 50% and 60% obedient, then who will be the choice? You got my point? One is 45% committed, surrendered. One is 50% surrendered. And one is 60% surrendered. Who is more competent? Who is the more suitable candidate? Who is the most suitable candidate?
It will depend on
That's true. But all three are equally competent in doing the job.
60%.
Right. So that's what I meant by leaving it up to the selection committee. The person who is appointing, he will select according to the ability of the person. But on the part of the Lord, he will appoint. Like, say, for example, demigods, they are not 100% surrendered to Krishna. They are not pure devotees. Demigods are mixed devotees. They are surrendered to Krishna, but they have desire for sense gratification. That's why they are demigods. Otherwise, they would have been Brajvasis. They would have been promoted to Vrindavan. But relatively, since they are surrendered to Krishna, obedient to Him, that's why He gives them the appointment. And they have their desire, they want, and Krishna fulfills the desires. Now, how many persons surrendered you are? For which job? That is the first question. Anyway, become a good devotee. Good devotee means surrendered to Krishna.
Yeah, one more question from yesterday's class. We were talking about how Mayavadis, they do not follow God, rather they want, they reject. So, sometimes say some devotees, they don't follow the authorities, means the representatives of the God, and try to implement their own agenda. So, this is a kind of what? A Mayavad or a kind of leadership? Or
Well, are they chanting Hare Krishna? They are chanting Hare Krishna. Are they surrendered to Prabhupada's Prabhupada's, that they are following the instructions of Prabhupada? So they are devotees. They are not thinking that Mayavadi means they are impersonal. They don't believe in the form of the Lord. Now these devotees, are they worshipping the deities? So, they are devotees. They may not be 100% pure devotees, but they are devotees. But Mayavadis are offenders to the lotus feet of the Lord. Maybe I have to chastise you for that.
Maybe those are pure devotees of the Lord. In this way, like to go back to God, it's very difficult. We have to take part in another customs of Lord in any universe, then you have to go back to God.
Yeah. So devotee's attitude is millions of lifetimes. Doesn't matter. Right? When I'll go back, like, you know the story of the cobbler? What did the cobbler say?
Cobbler said that he'll go back to Mathura after millions.
Now, what did Narad Muni tell the cobbler?
That
where was the cobbler sitting? Under a tamarind tree. And what did Narad Muni say? As many leaves are there in this tree, that many times you have to take birth. You have to come. And what did the cobbler say? He started to dance. Oh, someday the Lord is going to remember me. Then what happened? And then, yes. So, By the arrangement of the divine arrangement of the Lord, anything is possible. So do we want to go back to Godhead or you want to serve Krishna?
Serving Krishna is already in the state.
Then what's the Hari? Yes, Rajit Jaina. Yeah. Right.
So like you mentioned yesterday that in this material world everything is not matter and in the spiritual world everything is living, even below. So in the spiritual world is food stuff also living?
Huh?
Is food stuff also living?
Yeah, they are also conscious.
When they eat them.
Yeah? Then they say, oh, it's nice, so nice to be in the mouth of a devotee. So that, you see, like, the world of consciousness is beyond us to comprehend. From the material point of view, we won't be able to understand what is it like, the world of consciousness. Yes, Navati?
We hear so many stories, so many, you know, material stories, they become popular for a little while. So many people come and they try to become heroes. But all of them are forgotten. These stories are being told.
Yeah, very good.
Time immemorial, these stories are told and they never become stale. We always hear so many stories again.
Right.
But still they are very material and very nice to hear.
Yeah.
We may hear them n number of times, but still we enjoy them.
Right.
So, this proves that
These
stories are real, you know, authentic stories about Godhead. Other stories, they come and they become stale and they are, you know, forgotten. People come and they become popular and they are also forgotten.
Right.
But never the leelas of the Lord are, you know, stale or they are ever forgotten.
Right. Yes, very, very correct. Yeah. So that's the difference between fiction and Krishna conscious leelas.
And reality.
Right. Fiction and reality.
Like in this material world, there are 84 species. So exactly the same replication is replicated in the spiritual 84 species.
It's unlimited. Yes. 8,400,000 is there and on, you know, but they are not in that calculation. These are according to guna and karma. There is no consideration of guna and karma. There everyone is engaged according to Krishna's desire. Krishna's desire is unlimited, therefore the forms are also unlimited. Don't speculate like that. Now I have to chastise you. Just accept what Prabhupada has said in his books. Just accept. This mental speculation is not going to take you anywhere. Yes, Yamuna Priya.
Guruji, I want to thank you for speaking so nicely about the point on faith. You were saying that depending on how much faith we have in Krishna, Krishna protects us accordingly. This is how I understood. So, he's putting us through difficult situations to also increase our faith. So, Maharaj, my question is that some devotees understand this, but when they're actually going through the situation, it seems that there tends to be some forgetfulness or lack of application. So now the question is, how can one devotee help another devotee who is going through a difficult situation to remember this? How can we help them in their difficult situation to increase their faith?
By reminding them about Krishna and the importance of depending upon Krishna. That is the ultimate solution to all our difficulties and trials and tribulations. Is that, maybe you can repeat the last part?
I can imagine it was in that direction that the devotees understand this theoretically, but when they're actually...
The devotees are in distress.
They're in distress.
Right.
When they're in the deep of the distress,
yeah.
It's as if they forget this and they're just consumed by the suffering.
So that is why the association of devotees is so important. On one's own, one may forget. But if he is surrounded by devotees, then they will remind him about Krishna. Because they themselves know the importance of depending upon Krishna. But so when one approaches a devotee at a time of difficulty, what will the devotee say? Devotee will naturally give some help, but at the same time he will remind him about Krishna. Or, you know, when it comes to a point when no material solution is there, like say for example at the time of death, right? I mean, initially somebody is sick, you may call the doctors, you may make all kinds of arrangements for the treatment and all, but when all fails, then what? I mean, you may say, well, the doctors in Ujjain are not good enough, let's get a doctor from Indore. The doctors in Indore are not good enough, let's transfer him to Bombay. The Bombay situation is not good enough, take him to London. London is not good enough, take him to Orlando. But then what? At some point, all the material possibilities will be exhausted. Then what? So that's why not take that ultimate consideration to begin with? Okay, we are not saying that don't take material measures. But behind all that, it should be there that ultimately it is up to Krishna. So let's depend upon Krishna. Sometimes it happens, devotees come to me in total despair. Oh, doctors are not working, that none of the medical treatments are working. So what can I say at that time? I just remind them, depend upon Krishna. Accept these difficulties as Krishna's arrangement. And you think this is difficult, this situation is difficult? At the time of death it's going to be a million times more difficult than this situation. Remember that. And how are you going to remember Krishna if you can't remember Krishna now? So depend upon Krishna, remember Krishna, and then everything will be right.
So we should just remind them, that's
all we can do. Often the devotee, yes, right. And I'm sure many of the devotees have that one very amazing experience. Being haunted by ghosts, right? You get attacked by ghosts, right? You did. And then just you call out Krishna, what happens?
Sometimes you have to come and say it because you're...
When you say it, then what happens? Then what? So that's the proof. You just chant the name of Krishna and the difficulties will be over. And that's how you have to face death. Right, difficulties will be there. Prana prayana samayi kafabhata pitto kanthava rodhane vidhoksa smaranam kutasti. At the time of King Kulashekhar is praying that. At the time of death, when my voice and throat will be choked with mucus, bile and air. How difficult it will be at the time. I'll be trying to breathe and I won't be able to breathe. How will I remember you at that time? So that's how difficult it's going to be. But if we remember Krishna, if we really take shelter, Krishna is just waiting at that time. Let utter my name. Just try. Difficult, utter it. And you say, Krishna. Everything is, the dream is over. And you'll wake up in Vrindavan. Yes, Mirabai.
Well, you did something very excellent job in placing the samadhi of Mahavishnu Maharaj. You would like to know something about it.
Okay, yeah. you won't be here this. Okay. You see, when I was in Calcutta, three or four days back. When was that? Ekadasi was 26th. So on 25th. On 25th actually we got the news that Mahavishnu, Brajahari Prabhu called me and told me that Mahavishnu Maharaj's condition is very bad. And he might leave any moment. So Radhanath Maharaj and I were together at that time. So Radhanath Maharaj called up Madhavananda Prabhu, the in charge of Bhaktivedanta Hospital. And then Madhavananda Prabhu also confirmed the condition of Maharaj. And then Madhavananda Prabhu told some devotees that Maharaj and I wanted to speak to Maharaj, if possible. And we are told that Maharaj was quite, he was conscious. He was very conscious. And although he is not speaking, but he was responding. So we spoke, and I told Maharaj that I would very much like to see him, and I would go the next morning to Bombay. But then after some time, we got the news. At that time, Brajahari Prabhu was actually going to Bhaktivedanta Hospital, and on the way, he got the message that Maharaj left his body. So he phoned me and told me that Maharaj left his body. Therefore, I thought that, since I told, and now the at the time I was thinking that if Maharaj stays or leaves, I would go to Bombay the next day. And when I told that, Radhanath Maharaj also felt that he also would come. So we made the arrangements for travel. I just called up my travel agent and we made the arrangements. So Brajahari Prabhu by the time reached the hospital and he called me. And he was telling that these devotees were wondering if somebody could come from Mayapur to help them in Maharaja Samadhi. So I told Brajahari Prabhu that I was going the next day, so I will help. And from Bombay, I'll try to take Sevatulya Prabhu with me to assist us. And Brajahari Prabhu knew that I put Prabhupada in Samadhi. I was the one who, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I actually put Prabhupada in Samadhi. And so I had some idea. And then the devotees started to communicate with me. Brajahari Prabhu conveyed it to them. And so I was communicating with them. I told what to do, and it was supposed to be on. So they felt that Maharaj left on the 25th, and they decided to put him in Samadhi on the 27th, because many devotees wanted to come from different parts to have Maharaj's last darshan. So that gave us some time. So on the 26th, we, as you know, like from Bombay Airport, we went straight to the Bhaktivedanta Hospital. And in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, they decided to take Maharaj to Nasik on the 26th afternoon. We went there at about 12:30, and then they decided to move Maharaj at about 3:30. And so Maharaj wanted to have his samadhi in Nasik, because Maharaj actually grew up, his early days were spent in Nasik. He may have been born also in Nasik, I don't remember. So he wanted to have, he knows many people and many people knew him. And I was a little surprised when I saw the location. I thought it was not in Nasik, it was about 16 kilometers out of the outskirts of Nasik, quite far actually. It took us 1 hour to go there. And there's nothing, it's an empty field, just empty land. There's nothing, 6 acres of land. And I heard Maharaj bought that land 40 years back. And anyway, so then, as you know, like I came back to after seeing Maharaj, and they took the body, and it was decided that we would go the next morning. And next morning, after Mangalaratik, we left for Nasik. They had some difficulty, like you see, you have to dig the pit. And the place that they selected, after they dug 2 feet, they found rocks there. So they needed to have JCB to dig it. So next morning they got a JCB, and the JCB couldn't go very deep also, because they found solid rock, hard rock. So, but then, while we were driving, they actually, Yudhishthira Prabhu, Radhanath Maharaj's disciple, was arranging that, making that arrangement, digging the place and all. And he was in constant touch with me while we were driving. And then at one point he called and said that they found a place where they could go 8 feet deep. When it goes, actually, the body, that pit is dug about 8 feet deep, 6 feet by 6 feet and 8 feet deep. So then we went to, you see, Maharaj had a house in Nasik, so his body was first taken to that house. So we went there, and it was arranged that Maharaj's body would be taken to this location from there. And there is a temple, some of Radhanath Maharaj's disciples actually built a temple there in Nasik. Very nice, simple structure, but very nice temple. So Maharaj's body was taken first to the temple, and there the arati, where the god, the deities, he got the darshan of the deities, and then they offered aratik. And then after that we went to the location, and by the time it was quite late, like 12:30 in the afternoon. Our original plan was that we would start the ceremony by 9:30. That's why we left so early, at 5. Originally we thought of leaving at 4 o'clock, to be there at before 9 o'clock. But then when they told us that they found rock and they won't get a JCB before 8 o'clock, then we decided to go a little late, so we attended the Mangalaratik, and at around 5:30 we left from there. And so it was already 12:30 when we reached there, because it took a lot of time. Taking the temple of Nasik, ISKCON temple in Nasik, we spent about at least 1.5 hours there, in total. And The place, as I said, also was quite far, and the traffic was bad. And in the meantime, originally I thought that we would go there and then come back to Bombay and take a flight yesterday morning to come to Ujjain. But then I phoned Parshuram to find out. I have found out that there is a flight from Nasik to Bombay. And someone told me that there is a flight in the evening. So I thought, if I take a flight, then probably I can be in Bombay airport to catch a flight, evening flight, to Indore. So I called Parshuram, and Parshuram arranged the flight. So we took the flight from 5:30 from Nasik to Bombay, and then at 7:30 from Bombay to Indore. It's a Go Air flight. And so we just finished the samadhi at 3:30. It took us about 3 hours. You know, like for samadhi, you bathe him, we bathed him. I got all some of his intimate disciples to conduct this. Generally it is said that a sannyasi's samadhi ceremony should be conducted by sannyasis. But here I thought that the disciples will cherish it more and will appreciate it more. So I suggested that let his disciples do conduct the things, and I was guiding them. So all along I was actually guiding them to do, and they were also very nice. They just did everything according to whatever I told them. And Maharaj's body was bathed. We took Ganga water and water from Haridwar Kumbh Mela. And like that we took holy waters, and Maharaj's body was bathed, then dressed, and then we put tilak on his body. Some mantra, I wrote the mantra. Some mantra had to be written on his body with Gopi Chandan. So, and then after that, they offered flowers, and the senior devotees offered garlands. Actually, they had a few hundred garlands. Actually, there were about 500, 600 devotees. And 42, 45 devotees came from Surat. Just a coincidence. They were just on a pilgrimage in Nasik at that time when Maharaj left. Maharaj's body was brought in there. So they were there. And many devotees came from different parts of the world. And naturally from Bombay and Dwarka, all these places, devotees came. Maharaj's family members also was there. Maharaj's son was there. So he came from London. But he was there for about 3 weeks back. And so in this way, we put his body in samadhi. And so after the samadhi, there is glorification. But I couldn't wait for glorification, because to catch the flight at 5:30, I had to leave at 3:30. So just when the samadhi was almost done, I took leave. And I came to Nasik. The flight was on time. And the flight from Bombay was unfortunately quite late. Instead of 7:30, the flight actually took off at 9:10. And it arrived in Indore at 10:00. And by the time I came here, it was about 11:00. Yeah? 11:15. And then I met you all. So, yeah, it was very nice, and Maharaj was Anyway, since we are talking about Maharaj, let's just briefly discuss about him. Mahavishnu Maharaj, actually, Radha Pyari, is she here? Radha Pyari got the... Radha Pyari put that from Google, there was a biography of Maharaj. So she put it in the DCS Ishtagoshti, Maharaj's life story. And it was, Maharaj was born in 1920. He was born in 1920. And he was brought up, he was born, he was a Gujarati, so he was brought up in a Krishna conscious environment. And it was, Maharaj was saying, he mentioned, he must have mentioned himself, that his mother brought him up in Krishna conscious way. So he used to, mother used to teach him that whenever he got a new cloth, he must offer it to Krishna before wearing it. But he didn't know why. Like, so his mother told him to do that, he did it, but did not have any understanding why it was necessary. Only later on, when he came across Srila Prabhupada, he found out why everything first has to be offered to Krishna, because everything must be received as Krishna prasad. So Maharaj did his masters in English, and he was proficient in four or five different languages: English, Hindi, Gujarati, Marathi, and he used to know Urdu also. So he then he left India and settled in Kedem for some time. And then from there he went to London. And I actually met Maharaj in 1985 for the first time. And he was, from the very beginning, we had a very nice relationship. He was very affectionate. And whenever I used to go to London, those days I used to spend a lot of time in Soho Street. And Maharaj also used to be in Soho Street. He had an apartment near Soho Street. At that, around that time I met Priyavrata also. So Priyavrata also used to come to Soho Street every day, every morning. He was a manager of an art gallery in London, near central London, near Soho Street. He used to come to the Soho Street temple, attend the Bhagavatam class. He used to come for the deity greeting. Yeah?
I used to come at 5:30 in the
morning. He used to come at half past five.
Every morning.
Every morning. Very good sanskar. So Priyavrata also used to come. And I remember, because he used to go get dressed for work, he used to be dressed in suit and tie. And he used to serve everybody. After the class, prasadam, he used to serve. And after serving, he used to take prasad and then go to office. He had a nice... We used to call him Goti. No, it's actually a French cut. Now, Maharaj, you know, like, he was so nice. Like, you see, he was so much older than us. But, you know, in ISKCON, the sannyasis get a special, you know, status. So whenever I used to be there, I used to give class. And I used to notice Maharaj every morning during the class, he used to be there. And he was very, very jovial and very warm and very kind. Those days he didn't give classes, right?
No.
He didn't give classes. Because, you know, he used to come to the temple and attend the programs, and then he used to go back to his apartment. So I used to ask him, Maharaj, what do you do the whole day? He said, I read books. I read Prabhupada's books. So for years, I think for a good 5-6 years, yeah.
He was retired, Maharaj.
Yeah.
He had nothing to do, so he was in the apartment.
Right.
And he was slightly handicapped. He was disabled. That's why the government had provided him a disabled
car. What was his disability?
I think physically, I think legs. His problem with the legs.
Oh, achha.
That's why he was given a disabled car.
Okay.
He could park everywhere.
Oh, I see. But he was not that disabled, actually.
No, but you can see he was limping slightly when he was walking.
Right, that's true. That's true. And he was a very, very avid reader. And those days, you know, I used to take him just as one of the congregation devotees, you know, but he was very jovial and very friendly. And then he took initiation before.
He was initiated by
Jayatirtha. Yeah. He was initiated first by Jayatirtha. Now, here is another important thing, interesting thing. He met Prabhupada in 73. Prabhupada wanted to give him initiation. Prabhupada wanted to give him initiation. Prabhupada even told him that he should become a sannyasi. But he didn't take initiation from Prabhupada at that time, thinking that he was not quite ready, he was not prepared. And then Prabhupada left, and he used to lament later on. And I used to tell him that, don't worry, Prabhupada, you have accepted Srila Prabhupada, and you are following Srila Prabhupada, you are Prabhupada's disciple. And I always treated him like Prabhupada's disciple. And then I started to, then he started to travel and preach. At some point, he took sannyas. Which year did he take sannyas?
I think 91.
91. No, maybe earlier.
91. No, because I left 90.
Right. He was not a sannyasi at that time. Right. Right. Yeah, right. That's true. So in 91, he took sannyas from Shivram Maharaj. And he started to travel. And I remember I invited him to come to Radha Desh. Those days I was the GBC of Belgium. And in Belgium we have a very beautiful temple about 1 hour away from Brussels. It's a beautiful castle, beautiful, called Chateau de Petit Somme. So I invited Maharaj to come. And his classes were very wonderful, very learned, and very, at the same time, very jovial. He used to make a lot of jokes about brahmacharis. The brahmacharis' difficulties. And how brahmacharis' resolution becomes weak. And one incident I remember, he used to give some hilarious examples. I'll tell you this one. He was telling that there was a very rich man in Baghdad. And so one day a friend came to his house. So the rich man wanted to treat his friend in a very grand way. So he sent his servant to the market and told him to get the best of the things to treat his friend. So his servant went to the market. Then after a while, his servant came running back to him. And he said, "What happened? Where is the items that I wanted you to buy?" He said, "When I went to the market, there I saw death standing in one behind one shop. And I became so afraid." And so he came running, and his hair was standing on end. His body was shivering. He said, "Please tell me, what should I do?" Then he said, "You do one thing. You take the fastest horse and go to Basra." So the servant immediately got the fastest horse from the stable, saddled it up, and he rode for Basra. So then the master became a little curious, and he thought, "Let me go and see death in the marketplace." So he went, and he found death standing behind the shop. So he asked death, "Why did you scare my servant in this way, the poor guy? I sent him to buy something. Without buying anything, he just ran to me. Why did you do that to him?" Death said, "No, I didn't want to scare him actually. But I was a little surprised. Because I was a little surprised to see him here in Baghdad. Because I had an appointment with him in Basra." So he used to give so many hilarious stories. His Holiness Mahavishnu Swami Maharaj Ki, yeah. Mahavishnu Goswami Maharaj Ki, yeah. Gaur Premanandi, yeah. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Yeah.